Pull up a chair. I want you to close your eyes for a second and picture the quietest airplane you can imagine. Not quiet like a glider on a smooth ridge. Quiet like nothing. Quiet like the wind in the wires and a woman's breathing and the creak of wood. And then, out of that silence, a whistle. Just a whistle coming down out of a black sky over the Eastern Front. That was the last sound a lot of German soldiers ever heard. This is Radio Hangar. I'm Tail Dragger, and this is the hangar where we sit and tell the stories that don't make it into the glossy magazines. And today we're going to talk about the bravest group of aviators most folks have never heard of. They flew a trainer, a canvas trainer with an open cockpit and no radio, no parachute for most of the war, and a top speed slower than the stall speed of the fighters hunting them. And they terrified one of the most powerful armies on Earth. The Germans called them the Nachthexen, the Night Witches. And I promise you, by the time we're done, you're going to want to buy every one of them a cup of coffee and just listen. But first, let me tell you who's keeping the lights on today. Today's show is brought to you by AviationSoul.com. Aviation challenge coins for every milestone in flight. First solo, private pilot, instrument rating, all the way up. If you've earned it, they've got a coin for it, and you know there's something right about a coin. A coin is a thing you can hold. It's weight in your hand that says you did the work. Every coin tells a story. Go find yours at AviationSoul.com. Now, let's set the scene. It's 1941. Germany has invaded the Soviet Union, and the whole world is on fire from the Baltic down to the Black Sea. The Soviet Union is losing men and machines faster than they can count them. And in Moscow, there's a woman named Marina Raskova. You need to understand who Raskova was. She was a household name. She was the Soviet Amelia Earhart, a record-setting long-distance flyer, famous coast-to-coast, or whatever passes for coast-to-coast across all those time zones. She had the ear of Stalin himself. And young women all across the country were writing letters, thousands of them, begging to fly and fight. Their brothers were dying, they wanted in. So Raskova used that fame, and she got permission to stand up three all-female air regiments. Pilots, navigators, mechanics, armorers, every last one of them a woman. In an era when a lot of folks didn't think a woman belonged anywhere near the flight line. Now here's where it gets interesting. The one we remember best became the 588th Night Bomber Regiment. Later, they'd earn the honorific and become the 46th Guards. But the world knows them by the name their enemy gave them. And what did they give these young women to fly into combat? They gave them the Polikarpov Po-2. Now, if you've spent any time around vintage iron, let me paint you a picture of this airplane, because it is the whole story. The Po-2 was a biplane. Two wings, wood frame, fabric covering, doped canvas stretched over wooden ribs, the same basic recipe as a 1920s Barnstormer. It was designed in the late 20s as a primary trainer, a puddle jumper. The airplane you learned to fly in and then walked away from. A little radial engine up front, putting out maybe 100 horsepower on a good day. Two open cockpits, one behind the other, no armor, no radio, and a cruise speed you could just about match in a fast car. This was not a warplane. This was a crop duster. This was the airplane the Soviets used to dust fields and carry the mail and teach farm kids which way to push the stick. And somebody looked at that airplane and said, that's what we'll bomb the German army with. And you know what? It turned out to be a stroke of genius. Grumpy as I get about a lot of things, I have to tip my hat. Because they took the weaknesses of that little biplane and turned every single one of them into a weapon. Let me walk you through it. The way I'd walk you around the airplane on the ramp. First, that airplane was slow. Painfully, embarrassingly slow. Now think about that from the German side. The Messerschmitt fighters, the 109s, had a stall speed, the slowest they could possibly fly before the wing quit flying. That was actually faster than the Po-2's cruise. Read that back to yourself. To shoot the little biplane down, the German fighter had to slow down so much that he was on the ragged edge of falling out of the sky himself. And these women flew low, treetop low, so a fighter diving on them had a sliver of a second before he'd fly himself right into the ground. The Po-2 could turn inside anything. It could practically hover over a forest. Trying to swat it with a modern fighter was like trying to swat a moth with a fire hose. Second, it was made of wood and canvas. Now that sounds like a death sentence, and plenty of times it was. But here's the thing, the early warning systems of the day worked on. Radar and the infrared gear of the time were looking for big metal airplanes with hot engines. A wooden fabric biplane with a little cool running motor barely showed up. She was damn near invisible to the electronics. A ghost, and third, and this is the one that gives me chills, that little engine on the run into the target, the pilot would throttle back. Sometimes she'd cut the engine entirely and let that airplane glide. silent, down toward the German lines, no engine noise, just the wind singing in the flying wires. That whistle I told you about at the top of the show? That was the wind in the wires and the bracing of a gliding biplane. The German soldiers on the ground couldn't hear an engine, couldn't get a warning, until it was right on top of them. They said it sounded like a witch's broomstick sweeping across the sky, the Nachthexen, the night witches. The enemy named them out of pure fear, and the women wore that name like a medal. Now let me tell you what a night actually looked like for one of these crews, because this is the part that separates the legend from the reality. Two women. A pilot up front, a navigator behind her, who also handled the bombs. Open cockpits, remember. This is the Russian steppe and the Caucasus and the Crimea in winter. It is so cold that the wind coming over that windscreen would freeze the tears on your face. Frostbite was routine. Their hands working bare metal and cold steel and little bomb release toggles cracked and bled. There's no heater in a crop duster. The bombs hung on racks under the lower wings, small ones, by the standards of the war. The airplane could carry maybe a few hundred kilos, and often less because they wanted the fuel to make more trips. And that's the second thing that'll stop your heart. They didn't fly one mission a night. They flew 8, 10. On the worst nights over the hottest targets, some of these women flew 15, 16, 18 sorties in a single night, land in the dark on a rough field. The armorers, all women too, would run out and hang the next bombs by hand, by feel, freezing in the pitch black, no lights because a light draws artillery, refuel, turn around, take off again, go back into the flak. Think about your own flying for a second. Think about how wrung out you are after one good cross country with a couple of approaches at the end. Now do it 18 times before sunrise in an open cockpit at 20 below with people shooting at you in an airplane made of sticks and bedsheets. And here's the part that just about breaks me. For most of the war, they flew without parachutes. Early on, there weren't enough to go around, and the brass decided the extra weight was better spent on one more bomb. So if you got hit, if a tracer found that doped fabric, and fabric and dope and fuel go up like a torch, you rode it down. There was no getting out. You rode your airplane into the ground. Now here's where it gets interesting. And this is the tactic that shows you just how sharp these women really were. They almost never flew alone over the target. They'd come in as a section, two or three airplanes, and they worked out a routine. The first airplanes or the first pass would fly in and deliberately draw the searchlights and the anti-aircraft guns. They'd jink and weave and pull those slow airplanes around the sky as bait, soaking up the fire, lighting themselves up on purpose, while the last airplane came in dark and silent with her engine cut and put the bombs right where they needed to go. Then they'd swap, trade places. The bait becomes the bomber, around and around all night long. That takes a kind of nerve I'm not sure I have. To fly slow and straight into a wall of searchlights so your friend can live and hit the target. That's not just courage, that's discipline. That's teamwork of the highest order. And they did it night after night after night for 3 solid years. They flew from 1942 right through to the end of the war in 1945. They flew all the way to Berlin. The regiment flew something on the order of 30,000 combat sorties, dropped thousands of tons of bombs, and they gave the German army no rest. That was the point. You harass an enemy every single night. You rob him of sleep, you keep his head down, you make him flinch at every gust of wind, and you wear him down in his soul. 100 years of aviation, and folks still argue about the tonnage. Nobody argues about the fear. They lost people. Of course they did. 30-some of these young women never came home. And Marina Raskova, the woman who started it all, who fought to give them the chance, she was killed in 1943, leading her own bomber regiment, not the Night Witches, but one of the sisters, when she flew into bad weather. They gave her the first state funeral of the war. Her ashes are in the Kremlin wall. More than 20 of these women were named heroes of the Soviet Union. That was the highest honor the country had. 20-plus young women who started out writing letters begging for a chance, who trained on a crop duster, and who ended the war as some of the most decorated combat aviators their nation ever produced. And I want to say something about the airplane itself, because we spend a lot of time in this hangar getting misty over Mustangs and Corsairs and big radial thunder, and Lord knows I love all of it. But there's a lesson in that little Polikarpov that I don't want you to miss. The Po-2 was not fast. It was not powerful. It was not pretty in the way we usually mean it. It was, on paper, completely obsolete before the war even started, and it flew in combat in one form or another. For decades, there are stories of Po-2s giving jet fighters fits in Korea years later, for the very same reason. A jet doing 500 knots simply cannot slow down enough to shoot a biplane doing 60. the machine that everybody wrote off, kept right on flying because somebody understood exactly what it was good for and asked it to do only that. That's the whole art of it, isn't it? Back when Avgis was cheap and airspace was free, the old heads used to tell me it's never about having the hottest airplane. It's about knowing your airplane down to the rivets, flying it inside its envelope, and having the nerve to use what it's got. Those young women flew a trainer against the finest Air Force in the world, and they made that Air Force afraid of the dark. Not because of the airplane, because of who was flying it. So, the next time you're out at a fly-in, and you see some humble little fabric two-seater parked at the end of the row, the kind everybody walks past to go gawk at the fighters, you go give it a second look. You think about a 19-year-old girl with frostbitten hands, gliding down through the flak, with her engine dead quiet and the wires singing, lining up a target she can barely see, thinking about nothing but her friend in the searchlights and the next 8 trips she's got to make before the sun comes up. That's aviation heritage too. Maybe the truest kind there is. Most of what I've shared today comes from the histories of the 46th Guards and the memoirs those veterans left behind, along with the aircraft records on the Polikarpov itself. If a story like this lights something up in you, we keep the fire going over at RadioHangar.com. I'm Tail Dragger. Keep the shiny side up, and don't you ever let anybody tell you an airplane is too small to matter. Those women sure didn't.